welcome to The American Pulse. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that seeks to listen, express, and amplify the voice of the American people, no matter where you live in this great nation. We are unabashedly pro-humanity, pro-freedom, and pro-America. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to The American Pulse. One of the defining characteristics of Americans is a courageous willingness to put our values on the line in the narrative and spiritual battlefield that we find ourselves in, and to take heat in the process. My guest today happens to be a perfect example of this, a man who selflessly stepped up to public service after a long and decorated military career, only to be targeted by the morally compromised uniparty donor class and their little minions in the media and within the Republican Party itself. He was the candidate of We the People, and we did not win that battle. However, we're Americans. We're tough-minded and hard to get rid of. We dust ourselves off, learn our lessons, and come back with greater clarity, vision, and resolve. The founding fathers, not to mention future generations, are counting on us not to let the globalists and communists have our nation. This is neither hyperbole nor a falsehood to state it this way. And I feel honored to have this be the first interview that my guest has granted after an extended period of rest, renewal, and retrospection following his 2024 gubernatorial race. We caught up with him to talk about all the things we care about: God, family, the American way, and serving our nation. We also talk about the aftermath of the 2024 gubernatorial candidacy, his reemergence in his Christian faith, and the documents of the founding fathers. We also cover how America is a nation blessed by God, and how we have, to our detriment, outsourced our authority to govern ourselves, and what we can do to fix this and start to move the needle in favor of we the people. Let's get to our sponsor and our interview with proud American Sammy Bird. Enjoy the conversation. Today's episode is brought to you by the Renton Printery. From huge outdoor banners to small hard hat decals, the Renton Printery produce top quality, customizable, full color decals, business cards, letterhead, envelopes, signs, table tents, and more. The Renton Printery is a small, independent, veteran-owned business since 1957. For all your printing needs, go to www.rentonprintery.com. And now, onto our episode. My guest today is former gubernatorial candidate Sammy Bird. Sammy was raised by a single mother in the Bay Area of California. He is a veteran who served in the U.S. Marine Corps from 1978 to 1985, receiving multiple medals and honors for his service. He then reenlisted in 2001, where he then served as an Army Special Forces Green Beret. Wow. Sammy is a husband and father, a man of faith, and he is a proud American who leads by example and truly honors God, country, and family. Here is my interview with Sammy Bird. All right. I am here with Sammy Bird, patriot and veteran, husband, father, former gubernatorial candidate Sammy Bird. Sammy, welcome to the American Pulse. It is great to have you on the show.
Tony, it's great to be with you, brother.
Absolutely. You know, I saw you at the Patriots for Liberty event recently. I was so excited to see you because I've been thinking about you. A lot of people have been. And it was like, finally, you came in and gave your former team a bunch of hugs. And it was just really, really a great moment. And thankfully, when I asked you about coming on the podcast, you were game. So that got me really excited. But before we really get into Patriots of Liberty and public service and all the things we're going to talk about today, maybe just give us, for the listeners that don't know you, on base camp, that would be probably more than on American Pulse. But just give us a sense of maybe where you grew up, your background, how long you were in the military for, and your family, and anything that you think might be relevant today.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot since I'm so old, but let me go back in time. No, just a simple guy, born in the Bay Area. East Oakland, California is where we started. Single mom with seven children. And right there, it tells you that I was raised by an amazing human being, which is my mom. Mom got us out of East Oakland because it was very rough. We lived in poverty, but she always worked, and she moved us to Seattle. And so I was raised essentially in Seattle, Washington. We lived in South Seattle, Ballard, and North Seattle. And I think as mom became more and more established with employment, we moved towards the north, increasing our economic value, if you will. But, raised in a Christian household, a beautiful woman who encouraged me to do right, to get out and be everything that I could possibly be, find my own sense of exceptionalism, if you will. That's what I did. I didn't do well in school, from beginning of school all the way through high school. I think I did terrible, terrible grades, but I believe it was mostly because I was bored. And I ended up dropping out of high school and joining the United States Marine Corps when I was 17. And so August 2nd, I enlisted in the United States Marine Corps and shipped off to MCRD San Diego and was woken up literally with a big hand across the head. And, you know, I sometimes say I was partially raised by the United States Marine Corps, but I served United States Marine Corps for 7 years of active duty, you know, ups and downs, zigs and zags. But the Marine Corps really gave me a foundation of responsibility, accountability, leadership, and just a belief in something greater to myself. And that's not just our nation, but the brothers and sisters we serve with, you know. And I'll never, ever forget it. They say once a Marine, always a Marine. And it's true. And so got my honorable discharge out of the Marine Corps and moved on in life, went to school. But before leaving, I got my high school diploma because I promised my mother I would get my diploma, not a GED. She says, I want you to go and find a way to get your diploma. And I did. I went to night school and got my high school diploma. Grades were coming up. And then I got out and I went to college after living life, got my bachelor's degree, summa cum laude. I've got my graduate degree from Villanova University, you know, 3.8, and finished up my PhD. I have a year left in my PhD in psychology. And so
you went far in school for somebody that didn't do well in high school.
Well, that's it. You know, that's it. And so often, Tony, people discount folks, you know, because of what they think they see. Well, a child is not doing well in school. And so do we discount them and say, well, this is not a smart kid? Or do we actually meet that child where that child is and facilitate a pathway to where that child can reach academic excellence? And essentially, in college, I was vested. I saw the return on investment, as you do with adult learning. And I saw that if I applied myself, if I worked hard, if I got achieved more education, that I could do better in life. And
well, you said something too, Sammy, that I do believe there's a huge portion of kids that don't do well in school in the public schools that are just bored because they're not teaching anything very interesting anymore. You know, it's sad that that's the case, but there's so many topics that would be so interesting, but they don't touch any of them. They're too busy teaching ideology at this point.
Oh, 100%. And again, you know, you have teachers that are being overwhelmed and you have state laws and you have the teachers union who brings down their expectations of teachers and understanding that the magic really happens in the classroom. And that should be kind of a trifecta of engagement. You have the teacher, the educator, you have the student. And of course, you have to have the parent. The family must be included because when children have higher levels of family participation in their education, statistically, they do better. Overwhelmingly, they do better in school. So we need to give teachers the freedom to teach academics and have these unions step aside and the state laws that mandate more, I want to say, programs and policies that are other than academics, they need to take a side seat and let schools do what they're there to do, which is to educate our children, not indoctrinate our children. Raising a child is a parent's job, and parents are the primary stakeholders in their children's upbringing.
That's great. I mean, you know, how did you get started? Washingtonians know about your gubernatorial race, but how did that start? Like, how did you go from military and start your public service? Like, where was that school board? Was that a city council? Like, how did you first get your toes wet in realize, or, you know, when did the light bulb go off that maybe I'm supposed to be serving as well the public now that I'm not an active military member anymore?
That's a great question, and it's a great segue. One of the things I didn't touch base on in terms of my background was, you know, after the Marine Corps and multiple growth opportunities in different industries, I was able to get a job with the United States government and work my way up from a GS, which is the ranking schedule, nothing, so to speak, to a GS 14 out of 15 as a federal director. And so I had eyes on the government. I served in the government. And then when COVID happened and they made this decision to shut down our schools, our education system, and mostly it was the public education system because the private education system kept their doors open. And so when they shut down schools, my daughter, who was raised in public education in Richland, Washington, I knew right then this was a setup for failure for our children. Number one, you're isolating them from one another, which during those developmental years, children need that social interaction. They need that in-person teaching. And so I said, I have to do something. It was a matter of response to something that affected me immediately, which was my youngest daughter. And so I ran for school board. I was elected to the school board. I quickly found myself on the wrong side of the teachers union, you know, and I think the trigger was when myself and my, I guess, teammates in the board brought forward a policy that prevented DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, from being taught to our children and focusing on academic excellence. You know, they did a write-up in the national newspaper on that. So Semi Bird, a black man, leads this, and but the school teachers union revolted against me personally. And then my teammates and I, we brought forward another policy to say, we need to end the masking of our children. Number one, children are struggling just to understand what's being said by their teachers, but that nonverbal, being able to see a person's lips when they're talking, helps you understand what they're saying better. Not only that, physiologically, children were suffering with depression. And so we passed a policy to remove masks, to give it a choice to parents, whether they wanted their children to wear a mask or not. And that was the final straw. And they took steps to recall me and two other school board members. And, you know, I went through that and I don't regret anything because I did the right thing. We did the right thing. Masks were removed so our children could be free to learn. And of course, we learned all about COVID and the masking and the ineffectiveness of both.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you were the, to me, to many Washingtonians, just to shift gears a little bit, you were really the people's choice for governor. And I was so pissed off at the way that went down and how you were treated. And I wasn't alone. There was a lot of angry Washingtonians that were mad about how all of that shook down. To me, you know, we got beat by the corporations candidate, by the establishment candidate with all the money and media behind them. And it, in retrospect now, I don't think it's surprising that there was a lot of dirty tactics and lies and semi-truths and stuff. At the time, I think people were like, you've got to be kidding me. And I think it was really the start of we the people understanding this corruption is so deep, and it's inside of our own party, even this kind of establishment arm of the party. And you know, I guess without getting into counter narratives of how all that went, I guess my first question about it really is just how did you fare in the aftermath? You know, what did you learn from it? Because I think we all learned a lot. But I was really wanting to get your take on it, because when I met you recently, I was really pleased to see you and pleased that you were at peace. And I'm like, he's probably learned so much about what happened, and moving forward, it's going to help him. But it made a huge impact on the positive side. Even though we didn't win, we all learned a lot. And I just wanted to address that because I don't know if you know how much of an impact you've made, but a lot of what has happened since on the positive side was because you put your neck out there and showed courage. And so it, I think it emboldened a lot of patriots to say, okay, we got kicked in the nuts on this one, but what did we learn? And are we going to go away? No, we're not going away. I think it really put the, it kind of had a lot of us realize, hey, we're Americans. We're not going to go away. And so
Amen.
I guess, yeah, thank you. And yeah, so I just give you a chance to comment on that. I know that there was a lot of stories that weren't true. And you don't need to address all that. I think all that it's better to sometimes just to take the high road and ask you kind of what you learned and how was the aftermath? Did you just spend time with family and kind of, you know, I was thinking about you and your family in the aftermath quite a bit, actually.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. And, you know, I ran for governor because I felt it was a calling to me. And I, you know me personally, that I'm a Christ follower. Mm-hmm. I'm a man who acknowledges the fact that I serve God. And that's the motivation of me running for governor. So when you have this vilification and vitriol and vile statements, when you try to impugn or to destroy a person, it's the armor of God was in that shield was on me and surrounded me throughout not only the campaign, but also post-campaign, because it was hurtful. My military service was a majority of my life. You know, 23 years, 24 years, if you will, of military service, Marine Corps, and then Army Special Forces, and Army Special Forces in combat, and then intelligence. And you give of yourself and recognize by my peers in command for my service, it wasn't reflected in the attacks against me clearly. And right. I understand it was for politics, as they will say. So I will say this, you know, we should never lose ourselves. We should never lose our human decency and civility for the sake of politics. And if you're a Christian, you understand that we are supposed to operate within certain parameters of virtue and to walk in that light at all times, do our best. And so I left the campaign and I literally took almost 2 years off, as you and many other people know, so mm-hmm. that I can reimmerge myself in my faith. And so, you know, every morning waking up, reading new scripture, and I delved back into the founding principles of our nation, our founding fathers, reading their transcripts. And I really got into the history of America and what made America, America, and what was the founder's intent. So God and country became a priority. And I believe, as you alluded to, it's interacted. This is a nation blessed by God. If not for God, there would not be an America. And so I emerged refreshed, restored, reinvigorated, if you will. And I'm ready to get back and to get engaged to serve. And that is bringing education, you know, through biblical citizenship and other things that, you know, we can talk about if you wish. But yeah, I'm a vessel. I always have been a vessel of our Lord. And our campaign was an exposure campaign, again, as you alluded to, where you see that the dark oligarch circles and influence on political parties. And myself, you know, being a Republican since my first vote at age 18, completely, always, every time, and then becoming active in the Republican Party as a precinct committee officer, and then becoming a state committee man with the party, and then becoming the state or party chairman for my county, and then being on the executive board of the Washington State Republican Party, all those things. But when it came to politics, I was not the establishment choice. And I had right. congresswomen and congressmen and representatives tell me that to my face and said, the other gentleman was who they wanted. They've always wanted. And I had a warning. They warned me. Either step aside or step into a lieutenant governor position where they tried to bribe me with hundreds of thousands of dollars to do so. Mm-hmm. Those were the opportunities, or feel our wrath. So I'm not going to, as you say, get into the specifics, because there's no value in going low. We have too much work to do, and we're doing God's work. We're going to restore our nation and our state. And, I want to be as much of a part of that as I can.
Amen, brother. Yeah. You know, it's, you remind me, like, whenever we pick a candidate that's not the establishment corporation oligarchy representative, it always freaks out the establishment. I mean, that's why Donald Trump was so attacked. He did not come from from their ranks. He is going to upset the apple cart, and it's so it, they want control, in our state, it's Gates Foundation and the deep money of the deep state. They want to say, hey, this is our candidate, and if you're not that and you won't play ball by their rules, they're going to come after you in any way possible, as you're a testament to.
Absolutely.
One thing I wanted to ask you, we've trumpeted this on the American Pulse quite a bit, actually, because my sense is in the state of Washington, because we've been, I don't think we're as blue as everybody says, certainly not in the state. And I don't even think King County is as blue as they like us to believe, right? I think there's a lot of conservatives. The problem is the conservatives in Washington have been quiet. It's like they're just like, I don't want to cause a ruckus. I don't want to get involved and have people hollering at me, or maybe these blue-haired Taliban activists are going to come on my lawn. I don't want any of that. And so we have so many good Christians, so many people of faith, or just good conservatives that care about our nation that sit on the sidelines. And it's a time right now when there's a call to be involved, to get involved, even if it's at PCO level, even if it's to attend, your local meetings, your local legislative district meetings, or to go to school board meetings and let your voice be heard. Like, it's not the right time to be sitting quietly clutching pearls that things are happening. Like, it's we need good conservatives, we need good Christians involved. And I know, I guess I just wanted you to be able to speak to that a little bit, because we want to see more. I go to my LD meeting, and we have the same 25 people. It's great. I love them. Thank God for them. But we could use another 25 people that are raring to go, right?
100%. No,
Yeah.
I mean, and again, you touched on something that's huge, and this surpasses political party. And one quick point relative to what you said, even prior, when you have this establishment, people say, "Well, what is the establishment?" This is a donor class. This is a political class that controls our elections. And to me, that is an election integrity issue. We have an election integrity issue, but this is also part of the election integrity issue where you have this top-down selection process instead of a bottom-up, we the people election process. The people should be selecting their candidates. The people should be funding and financing and championing for the candidates that they believe will represent them the best in this representative constitutional republic form of government. Whereas now we have the big money makers becoming the political establishment candidate makers, and we can't have that. So that's undermining elections right there, and we need to stand up against that. Citizens do. And this again surpasses party, whether you're Republican, Independent, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever you claim. And now I guess it's Democrat Socialist is what we're looking at now. That party is starting to have their severe internal fractures. But this is the time. This is our 1776 moment right now. We just celebrated our 250th anniversary, the birth of our nation. You look back into history and the courage, the commitment that our founders brought forward to mutually pledge their lives, right? Their fortunes and their sacred honor, quote unquote, for this cause of independence and freedom. And then with Ben Franklin telling Elizabeth Powell after he just was leaving Independence Hall, signing the Constitution, what have we, sir? A monarchy, or and Dr. Franklin said, we have a constitutional republic, essentially, or if we can keep it. And so when people grow complacent, apathetic, and self-imposed ignorance, as Kant said during the Enlightenment movement, we are going to lose our society. We are going to lose our nation and the republic that was formed that gives people the power, where government derives their just powers from the consent of the governed, the people. The people are supposed to hold the power, but we've outsourced our authority as citizens of this great nation. We were the only country in the world that created a form of government like we have, this constitutional republic. And we put our heads in the sand, and now we see what we're dealing with. Socialism and communism is on the rise within one party, while on the other side, You have a Republican Party in this two-party system that George Washington warned us about, but you have the Republicans tearing themselves apart. And you saw again what happened with me. And it's if we don't unite right now, if we don't come together, and I'm not saying compromising values, what I will say is stand true to your values and your beliefs, especially if they are virtuous, meaning you are your brother's keeper, you love your neighbor as yourself, all these things that are taught in our scripture, bring that forward, but also that virtue overlaps into government. When you have a government that has taken advantage of our children, when you see all the policies that are coming out, that's not Republican or Democrat. That is Washington citizens, American citizens standing up to say, no, I am the parent. I raise my children. The school system does not. I will teach my child what I want to teach my child. And I don't like someone telling my child when they go to school that they can be a whole different gender, or that they should be ashamed of the color of their skin because of slavery, or if you are a black or brown person, that you should be hopeless, helpless, and adopt these victim behaviors that only keeps people of color down and not raising them up to have their opportunity to the American dream. This is what's happening right now. And I'm not sure if we'll get into the discussion on socialism, Marxism, communism, and as it is going to affect our current economy, a free market capitalist society, but it will destroy America. And so we
Absolutely.
need that rebirth of American patriotism, a renaissance, if you will, where we relook at who we are and we value who we are. But this is also part of that enlightenment, right? So you have the renaissance of the 14th to 17th century and the enlightenment of the 17th to the 18th century. The Enlightenment movement was really about science, technology, and stepping away from that authority, dictatorships, and monarchies, and thinking for ourselves as a free-willed people, which our Declaration was based on, John Locke's influence and Thomas Jefferson from the Enlightenment movement. We're in that period. We're in the middle of a culture war, if you will, between the American culture and every other culture that is imposing itself in order to diminish our heritage and American culture.
I love it. I think we could do a second episode on the very thing you're saying there, which is Marxism, cultural Marxism, Marxism and communism, and American mindset, collectivist mindset against, I think that has got many, many layers, and I think it would help clarify some things. I love what you're saying. I love it when a guest gives me the title. I think this is our 1776 moment might have been it. The bells were going off when you said that. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
It's funny. I one of my questions was, Sammy, are we seeing an American Renaissance right now? Something big seems to be brewing. And my most intuitive friends and patriots and the people that I talk to, Ryan Lundeen and my wife, like all these people that are seem really, really tuned in to what the American Republic is versus the establishment, all this stuff, they seem to be not celebrating, but like it's gonna go in our favor. There's a renaissance. There's something big brewing. There's a lot of things about Trump that have not been revealed yet. There's things that are happening that you're seeing memes about and little tidbits, and it seems like something's building. There's even murmurs of, I mean, they took us out of the World Health Organization. That was huge, and then there's been this kind of global capitulation tour that Trump has been on, where, and I'm like, I think there's this war against the cabal and the deep state, with all of their dark secrets and all of the ways that they've controlled humanity. I mean, I think we're seeing something glorious happening with America. And I can't, I don't want to predict timelines or what's going to happen. I think it's To your point, I think it's really good right now to realize what's at stake and to have a sense of urgency. Like this call for everybody to be involved helps a lot. You want to be part of this. If this is an American Renaissance that is our 7076 moment, like you want to be involved if you're sitting on the sidelines and you care about this nation, and you're a Christian and you're a person of faith. You want to say, how can I help? You know, yes. Americans love to do their part. We do. We all do. And so yes. This is a call to do your part in the movement that is happening. That's all we're talking about. And I believe God has got us supported, and it's at the wind is at our back, even though it looks like, this happened or this happened. There's going to be temporary setbacks, but Americans are okay with temporary setbacks, you know? Yeah. So I'll give you a chance to maybe just chat on that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And so again, to your point, and a very good point, when we, the people, come together, when citizens come together to take that difficult right over the easy wrong and to rally to goodness, to rally to common sense, that's what started this nation, right? Overtaxation without representation, tyranny, which was imposing its will on the people so unfairly that it sparked citizens to rise up and revolt. And now I would never call for a revolution, but I'm calling for a revival of faith. I'm calling for a revival of patriotism and belief in America in all that it stands for, because Tony, it stands for good. We are a good nation. I think Ronald Reagan took it out of scripture, that shining city on a hill. We are that beacon of light and hope. And because people right now throughout our state and throughout our nation are seeing with their own eyes the extremists that are dead set on destroying America as we know it, our American way of life, they're seeing in themselves and they're saying, I don't want to claim this party. I don't want to claim this party. Well, you don't have to claim any party, but proclaim liberty throughout all the land.
Mm-hmm.
That comes right off the Liberty Bell, right? It's yep. The wording off the Liberty Bell unto all inhabitants within. And that's what we need to do now. We need to come together. We need to rise up based on those biblical values of love and truth and compassion for one another, and to protect our children and our children's children. This is what we need to do. And this is the time, for such a time as this. And I will, you know, maybe evoke a little Thomas Paine to say, these are the times that try men's souls, right? Mm-hmm. The summertime soldier and that sunshine patriot in times like this will shrink from service to their nation. This is not the time to shrink from service to our nation. This is exactly the time, in order to protect our future and our children's future, we need to rise to the occasion in service to our nation. And I'm seeing it. There's hope out there. The numbers mm-hmm. are there. And again, it's not this party over this party. It's this people, mm-hmm. one nation under God, these people coming together to take a stand for human decency, civility, and to understand that America was and is that great experience where anyone like myself can start off in an inner city ghetto, born to a single woman, you know, who was raised in poverty, can find the American dream, can rise up from disparity and achieve all that we're willing to work hard for. That's meritocracy. That's what a nation under God, that's what America stands for. And I believe wholeheartedly in it.
As do I. I love it. You know, it's one of the things I've always loved about you. It's like you're an inspiring speaker. Your message is always lofty, but connected. Yeah, it's just really great. I can see how God is using you as a vessel to speak the truth on these things. And I'm looking, I'm serious, Sammy, I'm looking forward. I think we could do a deep dive into the Marxist American split and talk about, because I think sometimes people, they don't distinguish that, and it all gets the deep state and the media from the establishment has done a great job of muddying the water so people can't see what the difference is between an American mindset and a globalist mindset, a collectivist mindset, where, you know, and I think that I think you and I could find some really clear words and messages that would really help people go, oh, that makes sense. I did not know I was swimming in that quite so much. And regardless of political party, you know, and so I love that you address that, because so, you know, the Marxists have done a great job of dividing us and people, I can't have a conversation. And that's one thing I love about you, is that you're not leaving the left to just flounder, and where somebody like Donald Trump, he mocks the left. I don't know if it always helps him. I think he just I think he likes it, it gives him a sense of glee to punch at the radical left. And I understand, giggling about certain things, but I don't know if it always helps his popularity that he does that. And I it's one thing I've always really liked about you is like you're not it's not just the Republicans you're speaking to. You're speaking to Americans. And I think that's a message right now that's so important. But the last question, we got to get this horse in the barn. And but I wanted to give you a chance to talk about kind of what's inspiring to you now. I know that you have the organization Empowering Washington Freedom Alliance, EWAFA. You handed me your card and I did some browsing, but I wanted to get you a chance to say kind of what you're excited about and what kind of work that organization is doing to kind of assist in everything that we just talked about.
Tony, thank you so much. And this is exciting. We, acronym EWAFA. So if people go to EWAFA.org, they can learn all about us. But really, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that is committed to our faith and committed to restoring patriotism throughout all the land. And we start with our communities, we start with our state, and we grow it. And again, why? Well, we recognize that when you stop teaching civics in our school system, you have two generations removed from an opportunity to understand how their government works, that they are the control and the power and what happens in our state and our nation through their vote, through their activism, if you will, just getting out, getting engaged, going to school board meetings. And so what we're doing is we're providing courses on biblical citizenship, self-governance. We have a youth initiative. It's our New Generation Initiative is what it's called, where we just did an event the other day where we took a whole handful of young people to go see Young Washington to see how our most prolific founder and the gentleman, our president, who this state was named after, his character, his struggles, and his perseverance. And that is just one section of his life. And our young people left that theater inspired, motivated, and connected to our American heritage and our American culture. So our job is to get out and get people engaged, just like you said. And we don't distinguish or delineate between this belief or that belief. We only ask that you believe in America. And if you choose to believe a different faith, so be it. But believe in America, this nation under God. And together, we can bring about the change to restore our constitutional republic. So we're getting engaged. We have a youth summit coming up. We're bringing education series. Flock cameras is going to be happening in the next few weeks in the Spokane area, where we're going to have a summit, if you will, a seminar on, what flock cameras are doing and does it pose a threat to our Fourth Amendment rights? So we're going to continue to wake up, educate, inspire people. And let me just say this. Unlike many organizations within party structures, we actually have a written strategic plan where we have strategic objectives, operational goals. We know what our mission is, and we're moving out to engage and inspire people to get active in this great nation that has given so much to us.
That's beautiful. I am so in alignment with your guys's mission. I really care about education and the civics has been missing. I've used the quote by Malcolm X, never let your enemies educate your children. And then I usually follow that up with clearly the enemies have been educating the children at the point where they hate America. They don't know if they're boys or girls. They're reading and they're writing. There's no civics. There's no pride in our nation. Clearly, our enemies have been educating our children because you can see it in how they're coming out. You can see it. There's nothing in the curriculum that's like pro-America or pro-humanity or pro, family. And so we have to start taking that back bit by bit. I love what you're doing. Sammy, thank you so much for coming on American Pulse today and sharing time and wisdom. I just so appreciate what your mission is. I'm in alignment, as is many of the listeners. This will probably make this into a Base Camp for Men episode as well, because I think it's super relevant for the whole nation, not just Washington. So thank you so much. I'm in partnership with you, and God bless you and your family, and can't wait to see how this unfolds.
Thank you, Tony. God bless you, and thank you for this great opportunity to be with you today.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Semi and I enjoyed it so much we did a second interview recently where we do a deep dive into Marxism and its corrosive impact on American culture. You can look for that here coming up or on Basecamp for Men. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the American Pulse.